Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, September 27th, 2022. I'm your reader, Bill Petrosky. In local news headlines, Manchester Chamber to name Woman of the Year, Manchester, Iowa. Three women are vying for Manchester Area Woman of the Year. Linda Bessie, Lisa Gutsko, and Natalie Moorman are nominated for the honor, which will be announced at Manchester Area Chamber of Commerce's Empower Get Connected Women's Night event, which will be held from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. Thursday, September 29th, at the Delaware County Fairgrounds, 200 East Acer Street. Visit Facebook.com, Manchester Area Chamber, for more information. UWP Awards, Dairy Innovation Hub Faculty Research Fellowships, Dateline, Platteville, Wisconsin. University of Wisconsin Platteville officials recently awarded 5 faculty fellowships to help increase dairy-related research through the Dairy Innovation Hub. The Dairy Industry Impact Innovation Faculty Fellowships offer a temporary position for UWP faculty members to tackle research projects supporting the goals of the Dairy Innovation Hub, according to a press release. The release states that research projects funded by the fellowships will include a study of automated rotational grazing, evaluation of nitrogen availability for manure, and development of disease management strategies against root rot in alfalfa plants, among other projects. The Dairy Innovation Hub, which launched in 2019, conducts research at UW-Madison, UW-Platteville, and UW-River Falls campuses to develop methods for, quote, producing nutritious dairy products in an economically, environmentally, and socially sustainable manner, according to the release. The hub is supported by a $7.8 million investment by the state of Wisconsin, and this marks the third round of Dairy Innovation Hub faculty fellowships. Public informational meeting in Stockton to discuss chronic wasting disease. Dateline, Stockton, Illinois. The Illinois Department of Natural Resources will host a series of public meetings on chronic wasting disease, including one scheduled in Joe Davis County. The meeting will be held at 1 p.m. October 15th at the Stockton Township Public Library, 140 West Benton Avenue, according to a press release. Illinois DNR staff will share information and answer questions about chronic wasting disease, or CWD, an always fatal neurological disease that affects deer and elk. The release states that CWD first was documented in Illinois in 2002 and since has been detected in 19 counties across the northern edge and northeastern portions of Illinois, including Joe Davis County. For more information about the meetings or CWD, contact Wildlife Disease Program Manager Chris Jockas at 773-636-0819 or chris.jockas at illinois.gov. Galena to close trail park during hunting seasons this winter. Dateline Galena, Illinois. City of Galena officials have announced upcoming closures of a park and trail during hunting seasons this winter. Galena River Trail and Galena Gateway Park will be closed periodically beginning October 8th, according to a press release. The closure is implemented every year to ensure the safety of residents during the deer and turkey firearm hunting seasons. The park and trail are not closed during archery seasons. The trail and park will be closed from October 8th to 10th, October 22nd to 30th, November 18th to 20th, December 1 to 4, December 9 to 11, December 29 to January 1, and January 13 to January 15th. Signage announcing the closures has been posted at the entrance to the trail and at Gateway Park, and additional signage will be posted during the closures, according to the release. St. Elizabeth Pastorate collecting items for people in need in Appalachia. Dateline, Epworth, Iowa. A local pastorate will collect items for people in need in Appalachia. St. Elizabeth Pastorate will collect furniture, appliances, household items, shoes and boots, clothing, diapers, and other items from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Mondays through Thursdays, and at 9 a.m. to noon Saturdays, October 3rd through the 15th, at the Faith Foundation Building, 104 First Street Southeast in Epworth. The items will be sent to Friendship Center in Williamsburg, Kentucky. Call 563 563- 543-3721 or 563-590-1315 for more information. State grant loan to fund rail improvement near Boscobel, Boscobel, Wisconsin. A Wisconsin railroad company has received a substantial state grant and loan to fund a rail improvement project near Boscobel. The $1.4 million grant and $179,725 loan distributed to the Wisconsin and Southern Railroad Company are part of nearly $8 million in grants and loans for five projects that will, quote, lengthen rail spurs, install conveyance equipment, and increase storage capacity across Wisconsin, according to a press release. The release states that the grants are designed to, quote, help preserve freight rail service or rehabilitate track on publicly owned rail lines and are distributed through the state's Freight Railroad Preservation Program. Loans are distributed through the Freight Railroad Infrastructure Improvement Program and are used to improve rails infrastructure and construct new facilities. The Wisconsin and Southern Railroad Company will use its state's funding to replace old timber trestle structure near Boscobel, according to the release. The new steel and concrete structure will allow trail accommodations underneath for local pedestrian and bicycle connectivity, the release states. The funding will also help lengthen a rail spur. Dubuque Commercial Air Service advocates pitch $1 million two-year deal with bargain carrier. Story by Benjamin Fisher, thmedia.com. A Dubuque Regional Airport and Dubuque Area Chamber of Commerce team pitched a $1 million maximum two-year agreement with an ultra-low-cost airline to provide four weekly flights to Florida from the Dubuque Regional Airport following American Airlines' departure. Airport Executive Director Todd Dalsing and Dubuque Area Chamber of Commerce President Molly Grover told the Dubuque County Board of Supervisors on Monday that they are in ongoing negotiations with an interested bargain airline to provide the flights. Their proposal would use up to $250,000 per year of Dubuque County's remaining funds from the American Rescue Plan Act for 2 years, plus an equal match from the City of Dubuque. American Airlines ended commercial air service between Dubuque Regional Airport and Chicago O'Hare International Airport on September 6, basing the decision on an international pilot shortage due in part to decisions early in the COVID-19 pandemic. Dalsing told supervisors the proposed deal would get four flights per week, two to Orlando, Florida, and two to Fort Myers, Florida, on a 737 aircraft with a maximum seating capacity of 189 passengers. He said that studies conducted by the Dubuque County Air Service Task Force showed 38,000 annual passengers from the Dubuque Airport's, quote, catchment area of a 40-mile radius to Florida. From our true market estimate data to Orlando in 2021, there were just under 21,000 passengers, he said. To Fort Myers, just over 16,700 passengers. Out of our top 25, one is Orlando. Number four is Fort Myers. For our destinations, another 53,000 passengers flew to other Florida destinations. Grover said the move would also keep Dubuque as a player in future discussions with other airlines. The ARPA grant will restore commercial air service and regain passenger traffic. Really important perception and get us points on the board gets us back in the game, she said. There are real jobs and payroll and tidal economic output that will be impacted. Dalsing said the deal would also keep Dubuque Regional Airport eligible for the Federal Aviation Administration's Airport Improvement Program, which provides $1 million annually for airport infrastructure upkeep and improvements. For that, though, the undisclosed bargain airline would require a $1 million minimum revenue guarantee for the two-year period. That would not mean the city and county would have to pay $1 million, but that if ticket sales don't earn that, the entities would foot the bill. Supervisor Ann McDonough voiced cautious support for the notion, along with uncertainty for the financial logistics. We've never tried something like this before, she said. My concern is that this will need to be some kind of budgetable number for us. After the meeting, Supervisor Harley Potthoff said some support seemed unavoidable. Doing nothing, obviously, is not going to help us, he said. This would buy us 2 years. Hopefully by then this pilot shortage will get eased up some so we can get a legacy carrier in. Supervisor Jay Wickham focused on asking Dalsing to highlight the plan to keep the airport eligible for FAA funding. Grover said she would give the same request to the Dubuque City Council on October 3rd. County Conservation Board passes on paving heritage trail. Members of the Dubuque County Conservation Board recently passed on pursuing state funding for paving heritage trail. The board voted unanimously on Thursday to table an item that suggested Dubuque County Conservation apply for funds from the Destination Iowa Grant Program in order to pay for paving a portion of the trail. Dubuque County Conservation Executive Director Brian Preston said the proposal appeared on the board's agenda following requests from residents. During the meeting, Preston recommended against applying for Destination Iowa Grant, arguing that the county conservation's application likely not receive state approval. "It's kind of late in the game to apply now," Preston said. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds enacted the Destination Iowa program to invest $100 million in American Rescue Act plan funds in local tourism, outdoor recreation, economically significant development, and creative placemaking. So far, $50 million in grants have been awarded, with about $30 million specifically funding outdoor recreation projects. Preston suggested the county instead consider pursuing funding for the project next year through applications in the non-recurring Destination Iowa Grant Fund will only be accepted to December 31, so other state and federal grant funds will need to be pursued. Speaking with the Telegraph Herald, Preston said several residents have clamored for paving Heritage Trail for years as a way to improve its accessibility and increase tourism. In the 2020 Dubuque County Comprehensive Parks Master Plan, paving Heritage Trail was identified as a priority and a project that would generate $2.6 million to $3.4 million in additional countywide tourism spending. "It would attract a lot of visitors from out of town and generate a lot of tourism," Preston said. "We've been hearing about it for a while." However, members of the Dubuque County Conservation Board expressed their skepticism that paving the 27-mile trail is feasible in the near future, and the cost of such a project keeps it out of reach. "Applying a hard surface to the whole trail is going to require a big number," said Jay Wickham, County Conservation Board member and Dubuque County Supervisor. "I don't think there is any realistic proposal or agenda or even momentum to pave the whole trail." County Conservation Board member George Davis said he has heard from residents who wish for the trail to remain unpaved, and he believes the project cannot move forward until there is wide consensus on its necessity. "Nothing will be done until there is strong public consent," Davis said. "I think we're a long way from trail paving, but Preston said he believes the project is feasible if the county seeks funding outside its operating budget." "I think we need to search for partners and opportunities to make something like this happen," Preston said. "I do think it's a doable project." Preston said he hopes to garner more public opinion on the proposal, along with assessing what other state and federal options might be available for the project, if the County Conservation Board decides to support it. "We need to do more evaluation and get a better plan in place," he said. "If you look at our long-range plan, paving the trail is seen as a top priority." Project for sidewalks along JFK sees delays amidst state approval process. Story by John Cruz, thmedia.com. A project to install sidewalks on a major Dubuque roadway has once again been delayed. Construction on the planned sidewalks on a stretch of John F. Kennedy Road from the Northwest Arterial to Asbury Road is now not anticipated to begin until spring of next year. City staff had previously anticipated that bids for the project would be received by last July, but delays caused by the unofficial state review of the project have staff not expecting to award a construction grant until early November. "The state took a long time to review the plans," said city engineer Gus Sihoyos. "They are backed up and don't have the capacity for all that is coming in right now." The state review of the sidewalk projects became required after the city secured a $190,000 U.S. Department of Transportation grant to offset construction costs. City council members have discussed installing sidewalks along the stretch of JFK since 1999 as a means of improving public safety, pedestrian safety, but several residents living along the street who must pay for a portion of the construction costs have consistently opposed the project. City council members had originally voted in June 2021 to move forward with the project, but they later agreed to postpone it to apply for the federal grant in an effort to shrink the financial burden put on residents. Last October, city staff announced that they had secured the grant, bringing the total sidewalk assessments on costs on residents from $138,000 to $80,526, making the average sidewalk installation cost for residents $2,219. The remaining grant funds were used to offset the city's financial obligation to the project. In total, the project is now estimated to cost $351,809. Cihuayos said that the cost could rise further depending on the bids received by the city, but the assessments to all residents will remain unchanged. That cost is locked in, he said. While a construction contract will likely be approved in November, Cihuayos said, work will not begin until the ground thaws in spring. The federal grant also stipulates that construction on sidewalks must start by April 15th, although Cihuayos said it could begin sooner. City Council member Denny Sprank said that delayed installation of sidewalks has left some residents living near JFK disappointed, particularly those with children who attend Eisenhower Elementary School and still do not have sidewalks to safely walk to school. Some folks are waiting on pins and needles for this to happen, Sprank said. It's annoying that it's taking this long, but we're at least finally moving forward with it. Two Iowa companies sentenced in federal court for wire fraud involving Delaware County business. Dateline, Hopkinton, Iowa. Two Iowa companies recently were sentenced in federal court to a year of probation after a corporate officer used stolen funds to pay expenses for a Delaware County business. Energe LP and iLenders LLC received the sentence last week in U.S. District Court in Cedar Rapids after they each pleaded guilty to one count of wire fraud. According to a press release from the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Northern District of Iowa, U.S. District Judge Leonard Strand also ordered the companies to pay about $1.1 million each in restitution to 10 victims. A $2.4 million forfeiture money judgment also was imposed on each business. The release states that Daryl Smith of Forest City, Iowa, was a corporate officer for both Energe and iLenders. From 2010 to 2015, Smith perpetuated a fraud scheme in which he made withdrawals of over $2.4 million in funds from 10 of his investment clients' accounts without those clients' knowledge or authorization, release states. Smith used the funds to pay expenses for Permeate Refining LLC, which operated a now-defunct ethanol plant in Hopkinton. In order to transfer funds from client accounts, Smith used authorizations purportedly signed by the client authorizing the withdrawal of funds from the investment account, the release states. He either forged his client's signatures on the authorizations or used the pre-signed blank authorization forms without the client's approval. The release states that Smith was sentenced to more than 14 years in federal prison in 2018 after he was convicted of wire fraud and aggravated identity theft. In crime and court news, new plea agreement filed for Dubuque man accused of 2020 shooting. A new plea agreement has been filed for a Dubuque man facing multiple charges, included some related to a shooting. Sean Turner Sr., 26, agreed to enter an Alford plea in Iowa District Court of Dubuque County to charges of intimidation with a dangerous weapon and third-degree burglary. Such a plea is not an admission of guilt, but the defendant acknowledges that sufficient evidence for a conviction exists. If the plea deal is accepted, charges of attempted murder and public intoxication would be dismissed, as well as additional charge of third-degree burglary. The plea agreement, which was filed Friday, states that both prosecutors and Turner will recommend a 10-year prison sentence. Another plea agreement for Turner previously was reached in April. The agreement stated that Turner would enter an Alford plea to intimidation with a dangerous weapon and third-degree burglary and would be sentenced to 2 to 5 years of probation. However, Turner withdrew his plea after Iowa District Court Judge Monica Zrini Ackley said she would not be bound to the terms of the plea agreement. The intimidation with a dangerous weapon charge stems from a shooting that happened July 30, 2020. The attempted murder charge was also filed in connection with the shooting. Court documents state that Turner was, quote, propositioning a Dubuque woman and her daughter in the 2300 block of Central Avenue. Jeremy T. Vasquez, 41, who lived in the area, saw the incident while sitting in his porch. Vasquez intervened, and a struggle ensued between Vasquez and Turner, documents state. Vasquez disengaged, and Turner got into the passenger side of the maroon SUV, which began to pull away. While beginning to drive away, Turner produced a handgun and fired several rounds at Vasquez, with one striking him in the thigh. Vasquez was taken to Unity Point Health Finley Hospital for treatment of his injuries, documents state. The woman and her daughter confirmed to police that Turner propositioned them to, quote, come with him, documents state. The pair kept walking and heard 3 or 4 gunshots. During the investigation, police reviewed traffic camera footage of Turner walking in the 1400 block of Jackson Street and attempting to enter parked vehicles after the shooting, documents state. A hearing for Turner has been scheduled for Monday, October 3rd. Police say intoxicated driver leads officers on high-speed chase in Dubuque. Police said an intoxicated driver led officers on a high-speed chase Sunday through downtown Dubuque. Demetrius N. Price, 35, of Freeport, Illinois, was arrested at 11:48 a.m. Sunday in the 200 block of Main Street on charges of eluding, second-degree harassment, and operating while intoxicated. Court documents state officers had pulled over Price's vehicle around 11:45 a.m. Sunday for running a red light at the intersection of 12th and Iowa Streets. Price's vehicle fled from the traffic stop and drove at a high rate of speed south on Iowa Street with speeds in excess of 75 miles per hour, document states. Price's vehicle jumped the curb on Iowa and 4th Streets and stopped in the 200 block of Main Street, where Price was apprehended. Officers determined Price was intoxicated. Price threatened officers following his arrest, according to documents. Here are some local law enforcement reports the Dubuque Police and Dubuque County Sheriff's Department reported. Lindsay A. Barnhart, 35 of 3274 Hillcrest Road, number 16, reported the theft of a vehicle worth $6,000 between 3340 and 10:03 p.m. Friday from the 4400 block of Asbury Road. John A. Ducini, 73 of Zingle, Iowa, reported a burglary resulting in the theft of a $1,700 snowblower between September 13th and Friday in Zwingle. Virtual panel to discuss Iowa's proposed firearms amendment. A virtual panel discussion about a controversial firearms amendment in Iowa will be held next week. Iowa Catholic Sisters and Divine Word College will host, quote, Understanding the Iowa Proposed Gun Amendment at 6:30 p.m. Thursday, October 6th via Zoom, according to a press release. If passed, the measure appearing on the November 8th ballot would add the right, quote, to keep and bear arms to Iowa State Constitution, as well as require any gun restrictions be subject to, quote, strict scrutiny, the highest standard of judicial review. Opponents argue the amendment would make it harder to pass, quote, common sense gun control measures and put public safety at risk, while those in support of the measure say the move is necessary to protect Iowans' gun rights from infringement. Speakers on the virtual panel discussion include Art Roach, Acting Chairman of Iowans for Gun Safety, Tom Chapman, Executive Director of the Iowa Catholic Conference, and Tom Brzezinski, a Firearms Policy Analyst. Register online at bit.ly/3LFFB4M. Dyersville Area Food Pantry lands $450,000 grant to fund new, larger location. Story by Eric Hochstrom, thmedia.com. Dateline, Dyersville, Iowa. A state grant will mean a new dawn for a local food pantry and thousands of people it serves. Dyersville's Rural Community Food Pantry is poised to receive a $450,000 innovative nonprofit infrastructure grant from Iowa Economic Development Authority. The grant will be used to purchase and renovate the former location of Consin Cabinetry, 673 5th Street Northwest, to serve as a new home for the pantry and its monthly and holiday food distributions and Angel Tree gift-giving program. It's such a gift, said Mickey Kelchin, the pantry president. We are so excited. We started working actively on this grant after the first year. We're actually thinking of building a new location. Then we find out that this former Consin building was available. The pantry has been in its current location at 1,000 square foot space in an alley off of 1st Avenue East in downtown Dyersville for about 30 years. We've outgrown it, Kelchin said. Located in northwest Dyersville, the new space is slightly more than 4,000 square feet and will help the nonprofit accommodate the growing numbers of people receiving food. Our numbers have increased, Kelchin said. Last year, we served over 4,500 people. Right now, we're trying to get food ready for our Christmas giveaway. We're preparing for 264 households to come in and get food. Dyersville Mayor Jeff Jock said the pantry's grant will prove, quote, tremendously important. They provide such an important service to the community, Jock said. This will increase their ability to serve people in need. The Dyersville Pantry orders food from St. Stephen's Food Bank, a branch of River Bend Food Bank, and purchases other items from local grocery stores. With this food, the pantry provides produce to recipients twice a month, the second and fourth Wednesday of each month, and larger food distributions monthly. People can come in and get pretty much a month's supply of food, Kelchin said. They will get four or maybe five boxes full of food. This includes meat and eggs and milk if we have it. The produce days and monthly distributions serve more than 90 households per month in Dyersville and about 10 surrounding communities. This is up at least a third since the pandemic, Kelchin said. Kelchin said the current location could not provide enough storage. What we've had to do is find temporary locations for 2 or 3 months to house our Christmas giveaway program food, she said. The pantry's Angel Tree program helps provide gifts to area families in need. Kelchin said about 3 pickup truck loads of items earmarked for the program currently are stored at a local business and in pantry's volunteer homes. Jock said it is important that the food pantry find a larger location that can encompass all of its services. We're very fortunate to have received this grant, and I'm proud of everybody who worked on it, he said. When the pantry completes its move to the new location in the spring, there will be another benefit besides more space. It's more private. This way, with the new location, we will be away from the bustle of downtown, Kelchin said. There's also an overhead door, so on a rainy day when we get a shipment, we will be able to just pull in and unload. We currently have 2 refrigerators and 2 freezers. As part of the grant, we're looking at purchasing a walk-in cooler and a walk-in freezer. Pantry volunteers also will distribute food at the new location. We'll be able to store records there. Records currently are stored at various homes in Dyersville. It's so exciting to be able to have everything in one location, Kelchin said. Hinson discusses GOP priorities at Dubuque breakfast. U.S. Representative Ashley Hinson, R-Iowa, promoted aspects of her party's proposed platform if Republicans flip the U.S. House of Representatives this year during an event Monday in Dubuque. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, R-California, last week released the, quote, Commitment to America, a plan committing the party to pursuing an economy that's strong, a nation that's safe, quote, a future that's built on freedom, and, quote, a government that's accountable. Hinson highlighted some of her party's initiatives that fit into those broad categories during Dubuque Area Chamber of Commerce's latest Eggs and Politics event, a series that so far has featured U.S. Senators Chuck Grassley, R. Iowa, Joni Ernst, R. Iowa, and Iowa Senator Liz Mathis, D. Watha, who is running against Hinson to represent Iowa's new 2nd Congressional District. About 70 people attended the event at Hotel Julian Dubuque. Retired U.S. Navy Vice Admiral Michael Franken, the Democrat running against Grassley, will speak at an Eggs and Politics event at 9 a.m. October 25th at Hotel Julian Dubuque. Hinson serves on the U.S. House Appropriations Committee, tasked with building budgets for the chamber. She spoke at length Monday of her successes while on that committee, such as helping secure funding for the Chaplain Schmitz Islands trail system and to upgrade or replace locks and dams on the upper Mississippi River. But, she said, both she and her party seek to overhaul congressional spending practices. Our continuing resolution process is broken, she said of the votes Congress has taken to avoid government shutdowns. I'm going back to D.C. on Wednesday and still don't know if there's a deal or not for the end of the year. Our conference is focused on other options farther out. If we want to make fundamental changes to the budgeting process, it's going to take more than a 10-year outlook. In an interview after her speech, Hinson acknowledged that the commitment to America does not include specifics, though her caucus is discussing them, and includes a goal to, quote, curb wasteful government spending that is raising the price of groceries, gas, cars, and housing, and growing our national debt. We understand that one of the biggest threats to our country is the debt, she said. If we don't restore responsibility spending and take a comprehensive look at that, we're going to be in real trouble. In response to a question from an audience asking for a zero tolerance of looting, referring to incidents that happened in the midst of racial justice protests in 2020, Hinson pointed to a, quote, Nation That's Safe goal in her party's plan. I do not want to see continued attacks on our law enforcement, she said. If you loot and destroy property, you should be held accountable. A lot of this comes down to holding these, quote, district attorneys who won't prosecute accountable as well. Soft on crime politics and soft on crime rhetoric lead to more crime. It's very clear that is exactly what's happened across our country. You are listening to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, September 27th on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Darlene M. Turnmeyer. Darlene M. Duty Turnmeyer, age 85, of Dubuque, passed away peacefully in her sleep at 1:10 a.m. on Saturday, September 24th, 2022, at Hawkeye Care Center. To celebrate Darlene's life, family and friends may visit from 10 a.m. until 11 a.m. on Tuesday, September 27th at the Bear Funeral Home, 1491 Main Street. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. on Tuesday at Bear Funeral Home with Pastor Carla Wildberger officiating. Burial will be in Dubuque Memorial Gardens. Darlene was born on June 1, 1937 in Dubuque, Iowa, the daughter of Gustav and Hazel Stevens Schultz. Darlene was a lifelong resident of Dubuque, where she cared for her home and three sons. Darlene also served as the primary caregiver for her mother for over 30 years, her brother Carl after a stroke, and her son Boots after his motorcycle accident in his early 20s. She was a long-time devoted member of St. Matthew's Lutheran Church, where she was involved in a music program. Darlene loved to play the organ, sing and dance, and use her creative talent to write songs and poetry and create beautiful embroidery tablecloths. In her younger days, she enjoyed going to Melody Mill to watch her brother play in the band and occasionally join him on stage singing. There was never any doubt that Darlene's boys were pride and joy. She always said the boys were her greatest gifts in her life. She would be greatly missed by all those who knew her. Those left to cherish Darlene's memory include her three sons, Walter West Harris in Dubuque, William Boots Turnmeyer, Dubuque, Iowa, and Tim Vicky McIntyre, Dubuque, Iowa, her grandchildren, Tricity Horkmeyer and Brett McIntyre, and a step-granddaughter, Lisa Jansen. Darlene was preceded in death by her parents and three brothers, Harold Mildred Schultz, Carl Jack, and Jack Schatz Schultz. Darlene's family would like to thank Dr. Compton and all the nurses and staff of the Hawkeye Care Center and Hospice of Dubuque for their outstanding care of Darlene. The family will thankfully receive your support through greeting cards and memorials and Darlene's memories, which may be mailed to the Bear Funeral Home, 1491 Main Street, Dubuque, Iowa, 52001. Attention Darlene Turner family. Online condolences may be left for the family at bearfuneralhome.com. Velda L. Temperley, East Dubuque, Illinois. Velda L. Temperley, 98 of East Dubuque, died on Monday, September 26, 2022. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. on Wednesday, September 28th at the Miller Funeral Home in Dubuque. Burial will be in the East Dubuque Cemetery. Robert Duster, Robert Bob Duster, 75 of Dubuque, Iowa, passed away on September 24th, 2022 at Hawkeye Care Center in Asbury, Iowa. Friends and family may visit from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Wednesday, September 28, 2022, at the Leonard Funeral Home Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road, where a funeral service will begin at 7 p.m. Bob was born on October 5, 1946, at Holy Cross, the son of Edwin and Rita Freiberger Duster. His family moved to Dubuque when he was 5, and he has lived there ever since. He attended high school at Dubuque Senior High School. On July 4, 1968, he was united in marriage to Mary Sugenbühler at Sacred Heart Church in Dubuque, Iowa. He served as a private in the U.S. Army Reserve from 1966 to 1971. He was a member of the Key City Corvette Club. He worked at the Dubuque Packing Company until they opened Dr. B's Billiards and Ice Cream Parlor in 1985. After closing Dr. B's in 1994, he worked at Lowe's in the Tools Department and at Hy-Vee, where he is known by many to be one of their biggest smiles in his assigned aisles. Bob loved spending time with family and friends. When he wasn't belly laughing at impractical jokers with his grandson Dylan or watching his granddaughter, the Mighty Mazer, pitching strikes, he enjoyed playing with their dog, Gunner. He also enjoyed sitting in his back patio listening to his radio while tossing back a Bush Light or two. Those who know him would say he was one of the best dad joke tellers ever born. Bob was also an avid billiards player, having won multiple first-place team trophies over 5 decades of play. He was a lifelong Hawkeye fan and die-hard Green Bay Packers fan. He enjoyed playing cribbage, especially with Junie, his longtime friend. He also loved taking nice long drives with his wife in their Corvette. He's survived by his wife, Mary, son Sean of Chicago, and Chad, Becky Duster of Asbury, children, grandchildren, Dylan and Macy Duster of Asbury. Siblings, Darlene, Jim Mullen of Sun City West, Arizona, Rosie Arendorf of Dubuque, Roger Carroll of Dubuque, and Greg Patty Duster of Dubuque, sister-in-law Sue Duster, sister-in-law Sue Robert Westhoff of Dubuque, as well as nieces and nephews. He was preceded in death by his parents, Edwin and Rita Duster, brother Ron Duster of East Dubuque, and brother-in-law Elmer Arensdorf. The family wishes to thank the staff at Mercy Hospital in Dubuque and Hawkeye Care Center of Asbury for taking such good care of Bob, whom they all came to know affectionately as Bobbo. A Robert Duster Memorial Fund has been established. Louis G. Soppy, Monticello, Iowa. Louis G. Soppy, 82 of Monticello, died on Sunday, September 25, 2022. Visitation will be held from 4 to 8 p.m. Thursday, September 29th at Sacred Heart Catholic Church in Monticello. A mass of Christian burial will take place at 11 a.m. Friday, September 30th at the church. Burial will be at Oakwood Cemetery in Monticello. Kramer Funeral Home in Monticello is assisting the family. Donna M. Heffel, Dateline, Galena, Illinois. Donna Heffel, 74, of Galena, Illinois, passed away Friday, September 23rd, 2022, at home surrounded by her loving family after a courageous battle with cancer. The funeral service will be held at 11 a.m. Thursday, September 29th, 2022 at Furlong Funeral Chapel, Galena. Friends may call from 5 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, September 28th, 2022 at the Furlong Funeral Chapel. Burial will be at St. Michael Catholic Cemetery, Galena. She was born March 2, 1948 in Hazel Green, Wisconsin, the daughter of Donald E. and Eldora M. Lisk Rury. Donna graduated from Galena High School in 1966. After school, she worked for the FBI in Washington, D.C. and later worked 20-plus years for Dr. Darling. She was united in marriage to Clyde Heffel on November 29, 1969. They were blessed with one child, Michael. Donna was one of the kindest people who always put others first. Her son and 3 grandchildren were pride and joy of her life. Before getting sick, she wouldn't miss a sporting activity. She also enjoyed going on day trips with all of her sisters. She survived by her husband of 52 years, Clyde Heffel, son Michael, Cindy Heller, grandchildren Ethan, Addison, Owen, 2 brothers, Don, Reb, Rury, Jerry, Joy, Rury, 3 sisters, Bonnie, Terry, Murphy, Debbie, Howie, and Rebecca, Gerald, Treat, Rury, a brother-in-law, Leo, Cheryl, Heffel, and many nieces and nephews. She was preceded in death by her parents, father and mother-in-law, Philip and Mary Heffel, 2 sisters-in-law, Mary Ellen and Mary Heffel, 2 brothers-in-law, James Heffel and Robert Allen. The family would like to thank Dr. Beth Galone, Midwest Medical Center, Medical Oncology Clinic, Dr. Herman, and especially the Hospice of Buick, Nurse Jessica Stutman for making her final days comforting and pain-free. In lieu of flowers, the family requests donations are made to Hospice of Dubuque in memory of Donna. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.furlongfuneralchapel.com. Janine E. Rodas, Dateline, Elkader, Iowa. Janine E. Rodas, 91, of Elkader, died on Sunday, September 25, 2022. Visitation will be held from 10 to 11 a.m. on Saturday, October 1 at Leonard Grau Funeral Home and cremation service in Elkader with a memorial service to follow. Interment will take place at Gooding Cemetery, Wagner Township. Leonard Grau Funeral Home and cremation service is assisting the family. Arlen L. Kurth, Dateline, Lancaster, Wisconsin. Arlen L. Kurth, 88, of Lancaster, died on Saturday, September 24th, 2022. Visitation will be held from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Thursday, September 29th at Faith Evangelical Lutheran Church in Lancaster, where services will follow. Burial will take place at Hillside Cemetery in Lancaster. Martin Schwartz Funeral Home and Crematory in Lancaster is assisting the family. Roman J. Bertling, Jr., Worthington, Iowa. Roman J. Buck Bertling, Jr., 91, of Worthington, passed away Sunday, September 25th, 2022, surrounded by his family. Visitation will be held from 3 to 8 p.m. on Wednesday, September 28, 2022, at Kramer Funeral Home in Dyersville. Visitation will continue from 9 to 10 a.m. Thursday prior to the funeral service. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. Thursday, September 29, 2022, at Kramer Funeral Home in Dyersville, with burial at St. Paul's Cemetery in Worthington. Mike Martin will officiate. Roman was born on April 27, 1931, in Worthington, the son of Roman Jazz and Rose Lola Digman Bertling. He graduated from St. Paul High School with the class of 1948. He enlisted in the Navy from 1951 to 1955, serving on the battleship USS Iowa. Roman's dream was to raise beef cattle and farm full-time. Roman worked nights at Dubuque Pack for 12 years and farmed during the day, eventually quitting his night job and farming full-time. He married Margaret Trenkamp on January 30, 1965 in Dyersville. Roman and Margaret farmed in the Worthington area their entire lives. Survivors include his wife, Margaret, children, Steve Bertling of Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, Tom Bertling and Mike Amy Bertling, both of Worthington, grandchildren, Noah, Anna, Kara Bertling of Worthington, and Megan, Will DeBoard of North Liberty, great-grandchildren, DeClan, Gavin, Jackson, and Brinley DeBoard, siblings, Betty Ockenfels of Iowa City, and Donna Matronach of Monticello, sisters-in-law, Mary Bertling of Dyersville, Donna Snitker of Waukon, Mary Trenkamp of Dubuque, and Pat Trenkamp of Monticello. He was preceded in death by his parents, a brother, Charles Bertling, and several in-laws. Kramer Funeral Home in Dyersville is assisting the family, and information available at www.kramerfuneral.com. Online condolences and memorials may be sent to Kramer Funeral Home, 750 12th Avenue Southwest, Dyersville, Iowa, 52040. Robert M. Webster, Scales Mound, Illinois. Robert M. Bob Webster of Scales Mound died on Monday, September 26, 2022. Arrangements are pending at the Miller Steinke Funeral Home in Scales Mound. Burial will be in the Scales Mound Township Cemetery. Ronald C. Monahan, Dateline, Cuba City, Wisconsin. Ronald C. Monahan, 75, of Cuba City, passed away on Sunday, September 25, 2022, at Mercy One Hospital in Dubuque, Iowa. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. on Thursday, September 29th, at Howden Shield Funeral Home and Cremation Services in Cuba City, Wisconsin, with Father Bernard Rott officiating. A private family burial will be held at a later date. Family and friends may call on Wednesday, September 28th, from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. at Howden Shield Funeral Home and Cremation Services in Cuba City, Wisconsin. Also on Thursday, September 29th, from 9:30 a.m. until the time of service at the funeral home. A celebration of life gathering will be held at a later date. The Howden Shield Funeral Home and Cremation Services in Cuba City, Wisconsin is serving the family. Ron was born May 17, 1947, to Raymond and Mary Splinter Monahan in Hazel Green, Wisconsin. He married Evelyn Pollock on April 26, 1969, in Hazel Green, Wisconsin. He worked at John Deere Dubuque Works, A.Y. McDonald, and later at Barbara Coleman Manufacturing. Ron enjoyed fishing, camping, an avid card player, working in his garage, but most of all, he enjoyed time spent with his families and friends. He will be sadly missed by all who knew and loved him. Ron is survived by his two children, Jody Monahan of Dubuque, Iowa, and Jim Della Monahan of Hazel Green, Wisconsin, two grandchildren, Brandon Monahan of Lewisburg, Wisconsin, and Logan Monahan of Hazel Green, Wisconsin, fiance, Mary Westermeyer, three siblings, Judy, Deb, Doug, and Diane, along with many in-laws, nieces, and nephews. He was preceded in death by his parents and three brothers, James, Eugene, and Carrie. In lieu of plants and flowers, a Ronald C. Monahan Memorial Fund has been established. Memorials may be mailed to the Howden Shield Funeral Home, CO, Ron Monahan Family, Box 825, Cuba City, Wisconsin, 53807. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.howdenshieldfuneralhome.com. Here are some funeral services. Candy K. Brochaud, Oregon, Wisconsin. Graveside service, 11 a.m. Thursday, September 29th, Linwood Cemetery. Willie C. Berger, Garber, Iowa. Visitation, 4 to 7 p.m. today at Leonard Muller Funeral Home, Edgewood. Service, 10:30 a.m. Tuesday, September 27th, St. John Congregational Church, Garber. Mary P. Grady, Strawberry Point, Iowa. Visitation 10 to 11 a.m. Tuesday, September 27th, St. Patrick's Catholic Church, Monona, Iowa. Mass of Christian Burial, 11 a.m. Tuesday at the church. Janice M. Hancock, Schulzburg, Wisconsin. Visitation 10 to 10:45 a.m. Saturday, October 1, Centenary United Methodist Church, Schulzburg. Service 10:45 a.m. Saturday in the church. Walter W. Paisley III, Bankston, Iowa. Visitation 4 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, September 27th with a prayer service at 3:30 p.m. and rosary at 6:30 p.m. Rite Funeral Home at Birth. Mass of Christian Burial, 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, September 28th. St. Clements Catholic Church, Bankston. Eugene H. Reynolds, Potosi, Wisconsin. Visitation 9 to 10:45 a.m. Tuesday, September 27th, St. Thomas Catholic Church, Potosi. Mass of Christian Burial, 11 a.m. Tuesday at the church. Mary E. Seitz, Dyersville, Iowa. Mass of Christian Burial, 10:30 a.m. today, St. Francis Xavier Basilica, Dyersville. Billy L. Stant, Dubuque. Visitation 9 to 10 a.m. Saturday, October 1, First Presbyterian Church service, 10:30 a.m. Saturday at the church. Brian S. Tisfry, Dubuque. Visitation 3 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, September 28th, with a prayer service at 7 p.m. and 10:30 to 11 a.m. Thursday, September 29th. Church of the Resurrection, Mass of Christian Burial, 11 a.m. Thursday at the church. Here's a look at business news in the Dubuque area. Biz Buzz, McCulkin Restaurateur opens new establishment. New acupuncture clinic opens in Galena. Family-owned Dubuque dealership marks 70 years. Story by Kaylee Reese at thmedia.com. BizBuzz shares business tidbits from across the tri-states area. This edition highlights developments in Maquoketa and Dubuque, Iowa, as well as Galena, Illinois. A Maquoketa restaurateur has opened a new eatery about 2 months after the closure of a different establishment. Mega's Grill and Eatery, located at 101 McKinsey Drive, opened September 14th in the old Flapjack's family restaurant location, according to owner Mega Arojja. He previously owned Main Street Cafe, which closed July 17th. In 2019, just before COVID, we purchased the old Flapjack's, Arojja said. It was a landmark that had been here for 40 years as a restaurant. We had it all planned here, open here at the end of April and May 2020, but in March, COVID hit. But then we kind of regrouped and we finally opened. Ed Roja said the entire building has been renovated and seats about 130 customers, double the size of Main Street Cafe. Restaurant is open for breakfast and lunch daily, as well as dinner on Friday and Saturday. Initially, we had a plan to keep Main Street Cafe and do this more. But after COVID and all that, we decided to come here full time. Mega's Grill features a salad bar and a large Sunday brunch and sandwich menu, Edgeroja said. He added that everything on the menu is homemade and the eatery's chicken strips are a big hit with customers. We have a very good customer base in the area, he added. The restaurant also includes an old bar area in the basement, which Edgeroja said is now fixed up. He said he hopes to obtain a liquor license soon and open the bar at a later date. Also to open the features of beer garden for weekend events in the back of the eatery. It's been a tough kind of 3 years, but with hard work, anything is possible, he said. Mega's Grill is open from 7 a.m. to 2 p.m. Monday through Thursday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Friday and Saturday, and 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. Sunday. The business can be found on Facebook. New Acupuncture Clinic opens in Galena. A husband and wife have opened a new acupuncture clinic in Galena. Connell Acupuncture Clinic, 11400 US 20 West, Suite 4, opened in June and is co-owned by Richard and Megan Connell. Richard is a licensed acupuncturist and Megan is the clinic's office manager. Since we've opened up, we've got folks that are so happy to have acupuncture in town, either because they had a positive experience in the past and had to travel for it, or they heard so much good stuff about acupuncture, Rickard said. There's probably a lot of people in the community not familiar with it at all. It's an interesting opportunity, and we'd like to prove that it works. Richard has more than 20 years of experience in acupuncture and massage therapy, and is licensed to work in Illinois, Wisconsin, and New Mexico. He said Galena was chosen as a site for the clinic, in part because his wife is from the area. He said he primarily deals with treating pain and uses a variety of acupuncture techniques. He added that many patients also find the treatment relaxing and stress-relieving. Most people, if they hesitate about acupuncture, they think of needles, he noted. But these needles are super, super small. Most people are very surprised at how few they felt going in. If they do feel it a little bit, the sharpness is not as strong as they thought. Connell Acupuncture Clinic can be reached at 815-238-3803 from 9:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday. More information can be found at ConnellAcupuncture.com. Family-owned Dubuque dealership marks 70 years. A family-owned Dubuque automobile dealership marked a milestone anniversary this month. Anderson Weber Toyota, 3450 Center Grove Drive, recently celebrated its 70th anniversary of business in Dubuque. The business includes a car dealership, auto shop, and body shop. Sales manager Shane Burslaff is among the fourth generation of the Weber family to work for the business. His dad and uncle Tim and Jeff Weber own the business. Burslaff's brother Devon Weber and cousins Alex and Taylor Weber are also among the dealership's workforce, which totals about 55 people. Our dad and uncle show up every day, Butzlip said of the key factors to a business's success. They're involved in the day-to-day operation of what we do. We also have a very tenured staff, a lot of employees with many, many years of experience. Most importantly, it's how we treat our people, our customers, and our employees. Burslaff said Anderson Weber was started in 1952 as a Lincoln Mercury dealership by his great-grandfather, Les Weber, and Bob Anderson. While later, the pair decided to bring Toyota vehicles to Dubuque. They had to drive to Chicago to pick up three or four Toyotas, Burslaff said. It was kind of a gamble at that point. It was an import brand, but the rest is history. He added that Anderson Weber had two downtown Dubuque locations before moving to its current site in the late 1990s. Over the years, Burslaff said, Anderson Weber has prioritized being involved in the community, including by highlighting customers, other businesses, and nonprofit organizations. The resounding theme that I hear when I heard my dad, grandpa, and uncle talk about Dubuque is it's a great place to live and a great place to do business, he said. Dubuque is a very unique community. Anderson Weber Toyota can be reached at 563-556-3281. The dealership is open from 8:30 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Friday, 8:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. Thursday through Friday, and 8:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. Saturday. Here's an editorial, our opinion. Dream Center acquisition of Fulton, a great fit. Two recent decisions by a pair of local government entities open a new chapter for an old facility that could bring monumental change to an agency, dramatically impacting the lives of young people. It's the stuff that dreams are made of. First, Dubuque Community School Board members voted last week to sell the former Fulton Elementary School to Dubuque Dream Center, which plans to renovate the building and use it as a second operational site. Second, Dubuque City Council members supported that vision by providing the Dubuque Dream Center with $300,000 for the purchase and rehabilitation of the building. In the words of school board member Jim Prochaska, I can't think of a more worthy organization to have that property. The Dubuque nonprofit offers a variety of youth programs that provide mentoring, arts and athletic opportunities, career development, and academic assistance. Dream Center officials have said that having Fulton as a second operational site will let them significantly increase the number of students they serve, as the center currently has more than 100 students on a waiting list. Though the $500,000 bid by Dream Center came in under the $890,000 assessment of Fulton, it's hard to imagine a better outcome and use for the space. Fulton long served as the heart of the North End neighborhood in which it resides. As the Dream Center locale, the heart continues to beat. Another contributing entity to make the dream come true, a $200,000 mission grant from DRA fulfilled the rest of the Dream Center's bid. Those dollars in turn could help land a $3 million state grant that could help fund the acquisition and renovation. Renovations will include upgrades to make the structure suitable for child care. As the DRA reimagined its granting structure this year with an aim toward growing the community population, development of the child care options makes the Dream Center's project a perfect fit. And that does it for today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, September 27th, 2022. I'm your reader, Bill Petrosky. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thank you very much.